Here's a handout. Can't ask me to hand this out.
Call to order the Natural Resources Subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. This is Wednesday, February 16th. And a historic landmark for this committee.
Oh, geez.
All of the members of the host side of the committee are in attendance at the same time.
On time.
Now, we can't say that about our colleagues on the other side of the building, however.
Typical.
Well, you know, there's consistency there, you might notice.
Madam Chair, they are the upper chamber. Yes, they have special privileges.
Well, and considering that we're all in some kind of a walking race here, this is kind of ironic. But anyway, we are here today for a public hearing. We're opening the public hearing on House Bill 5074, which is the budget bill for the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. Mr. Siebert, do you have anything to open this with, or do you want to just go straight to Mr. Byler?
Straight to Mr. Byler.
Call forward Mr. Byler, the director of the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, and turn the proceedings over to my extremely capable, whatever you are.
Yes, Madam Chair, I've been trying to figure that out for 46 years now, but I'm working on it and making progress.
Call me.
Yes.
That could be half the day trying to figure that out.
All right. Well, enough with the foolishness. Let's get down to the serious business. Welcome, Tom. Good to see you again. And let's pick up right where we left off, and that appears to be right where we left off.
Thank you, Chair Krupp, and members of the committee. For the record, Tom Byler, the Executive Director at the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. If I might just point out, you should have in front of you, as a follow-up on yesterday's discussion, a one-pager that has some websites that we were referencing yesterday in our discussion. At your leisure, we hope that you'll have an opportunity to take a look at some of the information that's contained in those websites. It's some really good information that shows how we can pull together a lot of different information from a lot of different sources and make that accessible to the public. With that, I'll move right ahead and talk about our program prioritization. And we'll again be using the PowerPoints to help frame our discussion. In program prioritization, just the criteria that we used for those was based on, of course, our statutory and constitutional mandates, as well as direction from the governor's office. Yes.
Is it my eyes getting old, or is that just a little bit fuzzy and needs to be refocused?
Chair, looks a little fuzzy to me.
It's clear. You're the fuzzy one.
You're a doctor. I would expect you to say that. Yeah.
You're the fuzzy one.
Yeah.
It's fuzzy.
As long as you don't call me warm and fuzzy.
Just never do that.
That's right, because I'm a compassionate conservative. All right, strike that for the record, Anne-Marie. All right, Tom, please continue for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, Tom Byler with OLEB. Our criteria for our program prioritization, again, focusing on our constitutional and statutory mandates and principles from the governor's office, focusing on programs that serve the most Oregonians, emphasizing measuring and assuring program effectiveness, and emphasis on our core functions. This lists our prioritization and ranking, and I'll walk you through this very quickly. To begin with, though, I think the point I want to emphasize for you today is, as we discussed yesterday, OWEB has a fairly simple structure. We're a grant program, and our operations really revolve around getting those grant dollars on the ground, operating the grant program, the competitive grant process, making sure that we're fiscally accountable in the delivery of those dollars, and making sure that those investments are effective. So it's difficult to, as I'm sure it is with all agencies, to rank these in any prioritization. But nevertheless, with that preface remark, I'll start off. In the ranking for number one, we have the grant program. And what we mean by that are essentially our programs, grant management program and grant fiscal program. These are the programs that do the review for or help the application review for the grant process. They manage the active and open grants, and they are accountable for the fiscal side of things. In our view, without those functions, we aren't able to deliver our core function, which is to distribute and administer the Measure 66 funds and federal funds that we receive through the legislature. The second is watershed councils, and this really focuses on local capacity. And again, as we discussed yesterday, what's really important for us to be able to be successful in our program is to make sure that these local entities that are the delivery mechanism and implementing mechanism for our grant funds are able and have the capacity to be able to apply for grants and make sure that they're coordinating with the appropriate local interest groups and have the capacity to help put the projects on the ground. Number three and four I would group together, and essentially those are the resources, the funding resources that we have. Number three is the capital funds that we have through Measure 66. Those, as a reminder, are funds that are dedicated to the putting projects on the ground, the labor, the supplies, the equipment, the material that is needed to put projects on the ground through our grant program. And number four is the non-capital or operations side, which are funds that are also important. They fund the monitoring, the assessment work, the technical assistance, the education outreach, all related to the watershed health purposes for Measure 66 and the Oregon Plan. Number five is our monitoring program. And again, this plays a very important function with respect to OEB's goals and objectives in a couple of ways. One, this is the area in our office that is dedicated to making sure that the actual projects, the actions on the ground are in fact effective and helps provide feedback to our board to better understand where we get the biggest bang for the buck in terms of our investments. They also, this section provides an important function in a broader sense with respect to the Oregon Plan by coordinating monitoring functions among the agencies so that we're thinking strategically and collectively about how we go about our business. We don't do much of that monitoring, water quality, fish monitoring, we don't do. We help fund a lot of it, but we serve a coordinating function with the other agencies that are responsible for those activities. Number six and seven, this is the Independent Multidisciplinary Science Team and the Lower Columbia River Estuary Partnership, who you heard from yesterday. And quite frankly, it was very difficult for us to place these on our list, and because they really aren't our program. These are separate programs that our agency is, our budget is pass-through, serves as pass-through for. So it's very difficult, quite frankly. I guess the asterisk I would put here is that maybe we're not the best judge of where to put those on a list. And since they aren't part of our program, it's very difficult. But nonetheless, we put them on our list, and there they are.
Tom?
Yes.
Before you go any further, in talking with the chair, it would be... in the best interest, I think, of the committee, if you could have deliver the message to the IMST that we would like to have a work plan from them. We really need to know what it is that they're looking into and their schedules, their projects, costs, timelines. As you know, the governor has a large increase in their budget. And I am very interested in seeing what their work plan is. I want to make sure that they're looking at the kinds of things we want them to be looking at, especially if they're going to be expanded in any form. So a work plan is a really important piece that they need to bring to us relatively soon. If you could make sure that occurs, I would appreciate it.
Mr. Chair, I'll be sure to pass that along to the co-chairs at IMST. Is there a specific time frame that you would like for the delivery of that?
Pardon?
Mr. Chairman of the committee, I believe probably sometime before we begin the hearings in phase two for this agency, so it'll still be some weeks away.
And Mr. Chair, I do know that the IMST has been working on a work plan.
Oh, good.
And
very good.
So there is something already there, and it may be useful for the committee to see what they've developed so far, and that would provide an opportunity for any additional detail that they may be able to get from you, that you may have ideas on additional details that may not be in their current work plan.
We would just have to find a way to schedule that in the fall. But that wouldn't be inappropriate to have a first look, see at what they're doing, and we could have some additional comments later.
Chair
Krupp,
at a minimum, I can pass it along to the committee administrator, and he can circulate them through.
Great. Thank you, Tom. Please continue.
Moving along to the number 8 on our ranking, agency administration. These are this is essentially the director's office within OEB. Serves policy functions, coordination with the legislature, with intergovernmental coordination, policy rulemaking activities, and overall management of the agency. And lastly, we have a research and development grant program. I touched on this briefly yesterday. This is a relatively small portion of a funding source for our budget. And I think in the governor's recommended budget, it's about $1 million that's available there. So that's our list. And if there are no other questions, I think that moves us on to our third chapter, which is our performance measure discussion. A couple key points. We'll walk you through our performance measures today, and we'd certainly welcome comments, questions, and a conversation. The key points that I want to tee up this discussion for you, though, are that our performance measures were adopted in October of 2004. In working with the Interim Joint Legislative Audit Committee, so they're new. They're very new, and what you'll hear, a thread that you'll hear through our discussion today, is rather than us being able to provide meaningful reports on many of these, the discussion is going to be instead focused on what we're doing to try to put into place the mechanisms for us to be able to meaningfully track and ultimately report on these pieces. So that will be a bit of a theme throughout our discussion. The new measures monitor agency customer service, strategic investments in watershed enhancement, and are gauged on measuring return on investments in the areas of water quality, native fish populations, and wildlife habitats, essentially our watershed health focus. One other point I'd like to make at the outset, as we discuss some of these measures, I think it's important to recognize that these measures reflect both OEB's efforts under the Oregon Plan and through our responsibilities by statute and through the Constitution, but they also reflect efforts that are more broadly objectives under the Oregon Plan for salmon and watersheds. And I'll be sure to note those specific measures. Also contained within your materials in Section 3.5 are some additional requested reporting items. I think these items were requested in October of 2004 by the Interim Audit Committee. That information is there. We can walk through those with you if you'd like, or you can look at them at your leisure. Moving into our performance measures, and if we have specific questions, I may ask Greg Sieglitz of our monitoring program and Allison Henze, our legislative coordinator, to join us if we get into some detail. Just moving into our performance measures, we have performance measure 1. This is the total percentage the percentage of total funding used in agency operations. Under the current biennium, that's 6.6%. In the governor's recommended budget, 6.7%. Our target for this was 6%, and that was based on our agency requested budget that we submitted last summer. And the governor's recommended budget shifts that percentage a little bit. I think the key message here, in my view, is that this is pretty low overhead for a state agency, and we're in the ballpark, and we'll continue to try to move in the direction of meeting that target. Performance Measure 2, this relates to the Oregon Benchmark 35 on public management quality. This is seeking to measure the percentage of funding from other sources resulting from OEB grant awards. Here, under administrative rule, OEB requires a 25% match from other funds for each project that is funded through OEB funds. We regularly encourage grantees to seek higher percentage of investments from other sources. During this current biennium, grantees that receive OEB funds are leveraging, on average, 136% of additional funds compared to the OEB funds that they receive per grant. That's pretty good. That's pretty darn good, considering that we're only requiring 25% via our rule. It shows that the local groups out there who are receiving these awards are doing a good job of getting other fund assistance for their projects. Now, that number for this current biennium is different than what we've seen in the past bienniums, and we're trying to figure out what is an appropriate target. I think the target that we have in the materials before you is over 200%, and that is a worthy goal. But what we're finding is that from biennium, that percentage changes and can flux quite widely. What we are seeing, though, is that the percentages greatly exceed the 25% that's required. And what our goal is to get a clearer sense over time of what a reasonable target is, and to continue to encourage our grant recipients to overachieve in this area.
Representative Shuffler?
Thank you. That 25% match, is that a rule or is that a statute? Where is that?
Chair Krieger, Representative Shuffler, that's, I believe, an administrative rule.
Thanks.
Performance Measure 3, again, this relates to Oregon Benchmark 35, seeks to measure the percentage of OEB watershed restoration investments that address established basin and watershed restoration priorities. The key message for you today on this point is that OEB is in the process of adopting, through its board, watershed basin scale priorities for its investments. We hope to, we will have three basins completed by the end of this year, and we hope to have priorities adopted, and are targeting to have priorities adopted in all 15 watershed basins by the end of 2000. In order for us to be able to adequately measure this performance measure, we need to first get those priorities adopted and on board, and after that, we'll be able to generate reports on the degree to which those investments made by the board fall in line with the priorities that they've established.
Mr. Chair, just for the record, I believe Mr. Byler meant 2005. I think you said 2000.
2007. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I'm not sure what I said. Was I in the right century?
You're doing a fine job.
We don't remember either.
Performance Measure 4, again, relating to the public management quality benchmark. This seeks to measure the percentage, our effectiveness in our fiscal arena, looking at the percentage of complete grant payment requests paid within 30 days. We're meeting this performance measure currently, and we have made changes to our grant payment process in recent years to improve our turnaround time. We fully expect that we'll be able to meet this performance measure over time. And we'll look for ways to improve other aspects of our customer service in this regard, especially with respect to the time involved. In this focuses primarily on our Salem office, the turnaround time for our fiscal office and for grant payments received. And we're looking for opportunities to improve our process in terms of the time from the field to Salem. So that's going to be on our radar screen as well. Performance measure 5. This actually, performance measure 5, 6, and 7 are all trend, looking at trends. Performance measure 5 is looking at the trends in monitored native fish populations in key OEB investment areas. Performance measure 6, I believe, I'm just going to skip up real quick, the trend in monitored native riparian plant communities in key OEB investment areas. And then 7 is looking at key OEB investment areas and the trend in water quality, essentially. And the reason I want to mention all of these at the same time is because we're intending to approach these similarly in terms of how we measure the trend. And really the template for this is what we've done jointly with other agencies on the Coastal Coho project. And that is when really the key here is that as we're looking at these trends, we're not just, well, for an example on the Coastal Coho, I should probably give you a little more background on that as so that you understand what we've done there. Because it's more than just counting fish. It's more than just collecting the data. It's analyzing that data and assessing it and figuring out what it means. And that's what we've done with the Coastal Coho assessment in looking at the conservation efforts that we've done on the coast, looking at the data that we've relative to the coho on native coho on the coast. And through that, the numbers of fish that we're receiving have more meaning, and it provides more context and direction for us in terms of our future investments. From the OEB board standpoint in terms of where future investments of Measure 66 and federal fund dollars would go in terms of grant investments, but it also helps inform the natural resources management strategies for the natural resources agencies other than OEB. So while the native fish populations, native riparian communities, plant communities, and water quality issues are substantively different, our approach is going to be the same in terms of wanting to make sure that we're not just pulling in data, but we're actually working cooperatively with the agencies that have the expertise in these arenas, Fish and Wildlife for fish, obviously, Department of Environmental Quality on water quality issues, and Department of Agriculture on the native riparian plant communities, that we're coordinating effectively with those groups, that we're collecting the data in our key investment areas, and understanding what it means. This is going to be a long-term scenario for us, quite frankly. The Coastal Coho project took about a year of effort, and hopefully it won't take as long in other areas. But the idea is that we can focus on probably a regional scale, be strategic in how we invest those resources and how we coordinate with state agencies, and that through that analysis and collection of data, we're going to have a much better sense of the how our investments are affecting the trends of those populations. Yes, Senator
Nelson first, then Senator Bates.
Seniority first.
I didn't say beauty before.
There's not much to choose for.
Yeah, it came out of my mouth. I said,
"Go seniority." Okay.
Just talking about water quality and a benchmark. Somebody had indicated to me that determining the health of a river. I mean, that's a lot of what you're trying to do: determine the health of your water, the watersheds. But actually, instead of measuring that by salmon, which migrate through, you really need to measure that by the fish that are there, like the smallmouth bass and the walleye trout. And I just, that's intrigued me, and I don't know the answer. Does anybody in your department have any expertise on any of that that it could, I don't need it today, but at some point, it seems to me a benchmark, this is a healthy stream, there's a certain type of fish in there. So.
Chair Krupp, Senator Nelson, we're not the fish management agency, OWEB. It's not our area of expertise in terms of being able to provide you a detailed understanding of what different fish species needs are within different rivers across the state. However, we do partner with those agencies frequently. I'm not sure that we can look into that issue for you, but I'm not sure that we're the appropriate agency to give you a detailed response.
I mean, I was just saying that was a good measure of the health of the water, was whether or not you had this certain species, and I hadn't heard that before, and I just thought maybe you might have.
So there's your Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to have a little more history in this, because I read this stuff a couple days ago, and I marked 5, 6, and 7 as the only outputs that seem to me to be significant in your measurements. The other ones are what we call inputs, and I don't put much into inputs, so to speak. I mean, it's like a kid says, I studied the book last night, Dad, and I did my homework, but I flunked the test. Well, sorry, the test is what I was looking for. So the outputs are the most important thing. 5, 6, and 7 are basically your outputs. The other ones, getting species off the endangered species list is so complex and rare to happen and has so many other people involved. I don't understand how that really applies to you. So I'm with Senator Nelson here. I'd like to know, first off, last legislature said your performance measures are not adequate and throw them all out, start over again. So this is the start over. I'd like to hear a discussion just real quickly of how you went about making the decision of what your outcomes are going to be that you're going to measure. One was, first off, what happened to the old ones and why? Two, who you worked with in the legislature to get these new performance measures, and why you picked the ones you did, because I'm still kind of vague on this stuff. When I look at this, I think, can I look at this agency and tell me what they're doing is effective as increasing water quality in Oregon? I mean, I don't think about stream flows. I don't see anything about the makeup of water in those streams or temperatures or nitrogen loads or any of the things that we commonly kind of think about as far as water quality is concerned. I just don't see it here. And so I'd like to have a quick discussion of where you were, how you got here, and where we're going.
Chair Krupp, Senator Bates, if I could ask Allison Hensy to come up. I was not around during those discussions.
Neither was I.
And Allison was, and she will be able to give you some context of the history of this.
Does that answer your question?
For the record, please.
Hello. For the record, my name is Allison Hensy. I'm OWEB's legislative coordinator. And Chair Krupp, Senator Bates, that's an excellent question. To start with your question, I think that OWEB's original performance measures, like many agencies' performance measures, were more concerned with inputs rather than outcomes. And that's probably why the previous Ways and Means Natural Resources Subcommittee asked OWEB to go back and try and develop more ambitious, meaningful performance measures that really got at the outcomes that are the goals of the agency. And in doing that, OWEB staff worked very closely with Paul Siebert and
Berthold
and the Oregon Progress Board, who has expertise in this, and with Representative Susan Morgan, who is very interested in the new performance measures. In addition, there were three performance measures that were required of the agency by the last subcommittee, and those were reporting on the percentage of overhead in the agency's budget, and the measures relating to delisting of species under both the state and federal Endangered Species Act. And I suspect that some folks really just wanted somebody to be reporting to the committee about delisting under the Endangered Species Act. And I suspect realized that OWEB alone doesn't have control over that, but that there isn't any one agency that is reporting that, and so wanted to add that in. In terms of development of the new measures, we tried to focus on both the agency's performance in terms of our core function, which is our grant program, and in the investments we're making, and to look at the natural resources that we're investing most in, which are the recovery of native fish species, water quality, and riparian plant communities. And that's why we chose those three areas in particular to monitor the trends in, because those are where the bulk of our investments go.
Senator, does that work in terms of... Paul, you want to add something before I go to Representative Shoffler?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, maybe I can add a little bit more background as well. As the narrative says, the department appeared two times in front of the Joint Legislative Audit Committee during the interim. They were directed to have their new measures approved by the Joint Legislative Audit Committee and work, again, very closely with Representative Morgan. And also Senator Schrader sat on the Joint Legislative Audit Committee during the interim. I can make available to you their old performance measures, and I think that might give you some context to which you can see the what I believe is a big improvement this time around. I just also wanted to relay that the co-chairs are very interested in having maybe other Oregon plan agencies track the delisting measures as well, so that everyone is kind of focused towards the same goal. So you may very well be hearing those discussions around that come up when we talk about work session time for the performance measures with ODF&W and Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, Department of Environmental Quality, Department of Agriculture, Department of Forestry, some of those others. But I just wanted to give you just a little bit more background.
Okay, Representative Shoffler, you had a question.
Yeah, I guess, thank you. I guess one of your charges is to try and recover fish. So let's just put it on a line, and the measure I don't want to know is here's where we started, here's delisting, where are we? And maybe that's oversimplification, but that would be a great performance measure. Because, I mean, everybody knows nothing's been delisted ever since we started listing things, except for maybe a couple things.
Well, and part of the problem, Representative, is that OWEB only has a piece of that puzzle is the issue, because there's so many other agencies that are involved in that, and it's so hard to try to get at that, because that's the ultimate outcome that we want. And that's why Measure 66 exists and why that money is being utilized in the manner that it is. And it's so hard to lay that at the feet of just one agency. It's just about impossible. But it's a good point. Any way to improve what you've got? I've got Senator Nelson and Representative Krieger.
Well, Chair Krupp, I just want to note that I agree with the comments of the committee that OWEB is not alone in terms of these are performance measures, in my view, of the Oregon plan. And OWEB certainly has a very vested interest in that, and it's appropriate for us to be having our performance measures relating to this. But we're not the only ones involved, and we need those other agencies to be working with us. And we certainly will work our best to make sure that we're coordinating effectively with those agencies in that regard. I would just add, again, the Coastal Coho Project, I think, is really the example and the template for how we can have meaningful status reports on what kind of progress we're making in our investments of the Oregon Plan. And in this case, we looked at the coho fish specifically, but it informed our what we're doing in with respect to more than just it informed how we're doing on the Oregon Plan on the coast in many ways. It helped us learn better about water quality issues. It helped us learn how we're doing in terms of different types of conservation projects, fish passage issues in terms of eliminating barriers. It helped us learn what kind of habitat is in greatest need of restoration. It helped us learn what populations of those fish in what parts of that region, geographic region, need the most focus. And those are, I think, very constructive check-ins for us. I mean, it's essentially adaptive management of the Oregon Plan. And I think, in my view, that's where these performance measures 5, 6, and 7 lead us into those types of analyses, so that we're not only collecting information, but that we're working with the other agencies that have the expertise to better understand what kind of progress we're making, and that we'll report on that.
Senator Nelson, and then Representative Krieger, and then Senator Bates.
tongue-in-cheek, first, I took on this first was tongue-in-cheek, since we're consolidating the SBEs and everything, why don't we just consolidate all these agencies together?
I'm not trying to, that's exactly what I'm
Well, there has been some talk about that.
I'm trying to keep my little rural ESBs from being consolidated. So what's good for the goose is whatever. But the second thing, and maybe more, is how do you define native fish? Is that wild fish?
Chair Krupp, Senator Nelson, that's defined in statute. The legislature, I think, defined that last session.
Okay, that's statutory documents.
You have to be born in Oregon.
Born in Oregon. can't be a China peasant. You live in Oregon. Yeah.
Yeah. Second generation, you're okay.
All right, Representative Krieger.
Mr. Chair, first of all, you're working with the feds. And in my own opinion, there's no incentive for them to delist. You're going to work yourself out of a job. The other part of that is there is... no D-list number. In other words, they can't say that when you reach this number of fish that are native fish, that then you D-list. They're looking at it that it has to be sustainable numbers over time. They've demonstrated over time and through the cycles of the ocean that they can maintain. So these are all great ideas to get there and very, you know, great values we're trying to achieve. But I don't think that we've ever got to the point where we're going to be able to say that when we get to point A, that now we can delist. That hasn't really, I don't, that's not defined anywhere that I know of.
Chair, Representative Krieger, you raise a very good point and a difficult issue for us. Again, to refer to our current experience with the Coastal Coho Project, we have been partnering with NOAA Fisheries on that. It's been, a pretty productive relationship. However, I would say that the state has had to do most of the heavy lifting on that project. And folks from the state agencies, in particular ODFW, have done stellar work. And part of that work has been to complete a biological analysis, a status review of those cohorts, so we can get some sense of what viability is for those native stocks. And that hasn't happened before, and that needs to happen in more places for us to be able to move forward. Now, the other point I'd like to make on the Coastal Coho Project is that the listing issue is important. It has great importance to people publicly, and that's when you read about the Coastal Coho Project, you don't see headlines talking about the Coastal Coho Project. You see headlines talking about the federal listing. There are obvious reasons for that, but from the state's perspective, there's a lot more to the Coastal Coho Project than just the listing question. Our long-term goals are Oregon Plan goals, and that is for recovery of the species through our state programs. And the Native Fish Conservation Policy that ODFW manages is one of those programs. And one of the things that we're embarking on with our stakeholder group that we've formed with respect to this Coastal Coho Project is to work with these local folks, these stakeholder interests, to figure out what are our community goals in Oregon. What are Oregonians' goals for rebuilding these stocks and to put into place a plan to achieve those goals? That those goals, I think, in all likelihood, will result in a D-list or a no-list decision either sooner or later. But more importantly, they will result in healthy, sustainable populations of fish that will benefit the communities and the local economies.
What length of time would we be looking at for the appeals from the environmentalists that they didn't do it right? Senator Bates, I won't even make you answer that.
Thank you. It's 27 years is the answer.
We will, none of us sitting here will be in the building when it's done.
I guess I have this vision of four people standing on a stream bank someday in the near future down the Oregon coast somewhere. One from Fish and Game, one from Parks and Recs, one from OWEB, one from DEQ, arguing over who's going to count that salmon as part of their outcome, okay, or something of that nature. And just looking at this as sort of fresh eyes the first time, I really have a difficult time separating the outcomes of these different agencies and what they're trying to achieve. I mean, they're all trying to drive the same area, I think. But the overlap makes it impossible to judge whether one agency is doing their job or not. I mean, if I walked out in the field with you and looked at all your projects, I'd probably feel differently. But sitting here at this desk, looking at your outcomes, which 5, 6, and 7 I see is the key to this thing, frankly, I can't say that if these are achieved or improvements are seen over the next 5 years, if it was a web or DEQ or the weather, Fish and Game or Parks and Rec or any other agency. It's just, you know, and I'm not sure how you can define that better, but my thought is that ultimately you either have to have really close cooperation amongst your agencies or you have to form one agency. And my question to you is, how do you feel about forming one agency?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, thank you for that question. I don't have a formal opinion on whether or not it would be in the best interest of the state to form one natural resources agency. But I do think that you raise a very good point. These are complex, difficult issues to track. They're difficult to measure. You know, the beauty of the Oregon Plan is that it attempts to bring some coordination of these efforts, but how you measure them and how you ferret out the benefits of the investments that OEB makes through its grant program and the local projects that happen on the ground versus the management actions that other agencies take to improve water quality or fish health, I think that's very difficult.
I think we've run that one around for a while.
Well, I'm going to scoot past. Let's see. I think the we covered all those that trio, and move on to performance measure 8. This is a measure of the extent to which watershed councils funded by OEB accomplish their work plans each biennium. I believe I mentioned yesterday that we have merit-based criteria that we use in awarding capacity grants to help support their operations. And historically, OEB has provided about $4.1 million for watershed council support. Those criteria, that merit-based criteria, involves work plans. And we are in the process of going through a grant cycle that will be making decisions. The board will be making decisions in May on these work plans, based on these work plans. And we'll be looking at those elements of the work plans and using those as a guide for determining whether they're completing work as planned in those work plans. So we will. That's we're in good shape to be able to provide some meaningful reporting on this. We'll be able to do our first review of the extent to which councils complete the work plans after this cycle is completed. So this summer, early fall, I think we'll be in a position to get a sense of the extent to which these councils are completing and accomplishing their work plans. And we'll use that as the template to be able to report on that over time.
All the watershed council support people, coordinators, are they all paid?
Mr. Chair, through OEB funds?
Through any funds. You're doing 58 of them?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, we are funding 58 out of 92 councils. Not all of the council coordinators apparently are paid positions.
I think what I'm trying to get at is when I had left OWEB, it appeared that nearly everyone, in fact, all the members of the watershed councils are volunteers. They're farmers, they're commercial fishermen, they're a business, they're a teacher, forester, whatever it might be, and they volunteer their time. And when this thing started, it was obvious that those that had aggressive, well-trained coordinators were getting things done and on the ground, prepared and better understanding the process. And I think those dollars were much better applied to the ground, and we got a lot for our dollar. Can you address that? I mean, that's maybe I shouldn't be speaking for it, but that's what I felt and what I saw. Do you see that pattern where those 58 that are paid are maybe performing a little better because they have professional people there to help?
I think I'm going to have to, Mr. Chair, I'm going to have to ask someone with a little more context and history to respond to your question.
For the record, Ken Beardy, Deputy Director of OEB, has the misfortune to be around for a long time. Direct answer to your question, Representative Krieger, is that we've found that where the Watershed Council, which is made up of volunteers, has someone that will, that has the time available, and you get time available from people by paying them, have them available to develop the project, to deal with the agencies, to deal with the grant process, they're able to get more done. And our experience is that where there is a paid coordinator, where there's a paid watershed technical specialist in the Soil and Water Conservation District, they're able to achieve a great deal more than where they're relying totally on volunteer work. And there is almost, as I was at Soil and Water Conservation Commission meeting earlier today, I was looking through their reports from their watershed technical specialists, and there's almost a direct relationship between the number of projects that they were doing through our small grant program and other, and whether or not they had a watershed technical specialist. So there's a very direct relationship between the capacity of that group and whether or not they have somebody that has that as their responsibility.
Thank you.
Okay. Tom, why don't you move on if there's anyone else? Okay, go ahead.
This is Performance Measure 9, and I'll before I wade into this one, I'll probably ask Greg Sieglitz of our monitoring program to join us, because I tend to get this one a little confused myself. But this is relating to making sure that our monitoring strategy, and again, this relates back to some of the comments of the committee about making sure that we're coordinating our functions as a state with all the state agencies, that we're focusing in the right arenas. And if I could just have Greg give you a quick run-through of how we're approaching this one.
For the record, Greg Sieglitz, I'm the monitoring program manager at OEB. This performance measure is attempting to capture the percentage of Oregon plan monitoring areas, which are geographic areas, that contain native fish listed under either the Federal or State Endangered Species Act, where monitoring information is considered adequate under the Oregon plan monitoring strategy. It's obviously a complex statement, but I think the part of it that we've been working at OEB to try to define to help us establish a target is what is the need for monitoring in any particular reporting area. There's obviously ongoing monitoring in many of the reporting areas, principally by ODFW, DEQ, and other entities, but what we're trying to do is establish what's that overall need. In the coastal coho assessment, clearly that was an investment that was made deliberately to meet the need for coastal coho. And I think the returns on that assessment are telling us that we've done that. So the real important aspect of this for us, as I said, is that we have to establish those needs, because those aren't spelled out in the Oregon plan or in this Oregon plan monitoring strategy. There's a framework set up for those organizations that are involved in the Oregon plan to sit down through this Oregon plan monitoring team and start to establish those priorities and those needs, and that's where we'll be focusing to try to capture that overall need. One other piece of this is the last bullet, and that is OEB has invested in ODFW's status review of native fish species. And so we think that that's going to lead to helping us more define what are the needs for some of those species that aren't on the radar screen now, like coastal coho, some of the other resident fish species, and that kind of thing.
And Shasta, your question.
Thank you. Are there any examples of where DEQ was monitoring something and you guys are monitoring the same thing, or ODFW, where there was an overlap of a monitoring station or whatever going on where you could use their data? Do you guys go through and make sure that isn't happening?
Chair Krupp, Representative Schaffler, that's precisely the arrangement within the Oregon plan with the structure of a core team of deputy directors and then the various teams underneath that. And the one we're talking about here is the Oregon plan monitoring team, so that at a high level, those kinds of things get talked about. So the very agencies that are involved in monitoring can talk about what their priorities are and where they're measuring, and then they can talk to folks that are in the field that are actually doing that work to make sure that there isn't that duplication. I think that's one of the things that has been a real benefit of the plan.
Yes, sir.
Okay, and then who monitors? Is it a paid staff? Is it volunteers? A combination? And then whose data do you accept if it's volunteers?
Chair Representative Schaffler, it's all of those things. We do have data that comes from professionals in state agencies and other organizations, and we do have volunteer data that comes in by way of organization, by watershed council or soil and water conservation districts. And that's the type of discussion that the monitoring team has, is what quality of information are we looking for, and what can be used for certain types of analyses.
Yes.
Okay. Now, if you're accepting volunteers and their data is found acceptable, would that be also acceptable to allow us to use that data to say we are meeting the Clean Water Act? And see where I'm going here? I'm trying to, if we're going to quit monitoring X, Y, and Z because we haven't got enough money to fund DEQ, will we be able to fill it in with volunteers? Is what I'm asking for free, which is, and I don't want to do that. That's not the direction I want to go, but we're pretty desperate for money. DEQ is in here showing us how we're going to quit monitoring possibly if we go with some of the reductions. That's what I'm asking.
Chair Krupp, Representative Schaffler, with water quality monitoring in particular, the example you're using, there is a paid volunteer water quality monitoring person that essentially sets standards and protocols and assists volunteers so that there's some assurance that the type of information they collect and the way that they're doing it would be acceptable to be used in the future. I think that it's likely you would still have to have some kind of oversight that can establish those protocols and provide that assistance so that the quality of information is usable. But that is, in that example, that's something that's ongoing now.
Thank you.
Chair Krupp, Representative Schaffler,
yes.
If I might add just
sure.
One point, just a clarification that OEB staff do not do monitoring. We're the grant program agency, and we rely on these other agencies with the technical expertise to do the water quality and fish related monitoring and so on.
You could volunteer on weekends.
Yes, you could.
Please continue. Moving along then, the next two performance measures, number 10 and 11, relates to a topic that we touched on a little bit earlier about the delisting. Both, number 10 is delisting, pursuing delisting, tracking the number of species in Oregon that were delisted from the Federal Endangered Species Act, and just bumping forward. Number 11 is the percentage of species listed as threatened that have been under the State Endangered Species Act that have been delisted. I think that this raises some themes that the committee has identified with respect to where OEB fits in this picture and how this implicates Oregon plan objectives and other multiple state agencies. The other point I would like to make on this is that there are other ways to measure success for the state and the Oregon plan and OEB that aren't necessarily quantified through a D-list. And as an example, there have been some actions that the state has been able to inform listing decisions where there aren't currently listed fish. In the Klamath, for example, with steelhead, where we avoided a listing. We believe in large part because of some of the information and actions that we've done related to the Oregon plan. That is not quantified here. Moreover, technically speaking, on the coast, if NOAA Fisheries decides not to list the coastal coho, in part based on the assessment work that we've done on the coast, technically speaking, the fish aren't currently listed right now. And so that would not be a D-list. That would be a no-list decision. So, again, I think we might have some success stories that would fly under the radar screen with respect to this particular performance measure.
Dr. Bates, you have a perplexed look.
Oh, I have a lot of perplexed look. I'm just having a hard time. Mr. Chair, if you indulge me again, I'm looking through all these and thinking huge amount of overlap. Two of the performance measures rely on data from Fish and Wildlife. One relies on data from DEQ. One relies on data from about five different agencies, like the riparian one. It just makes it so amorphous to try to figure out what's going on with the work they're doing, which may be absolutely vital and excellent. I don't quite understand why we have all these different agencies out there, and I'd like to at least raise the question for discussion sometime whether or not OWEB should join Fish and Game or OWEB should join DEQ. This would be a firestorm. I don't want any phone calls, okay? But at least raise
the
question.
Oh, you'll get them.
I'll get them. But sometimes you just have to ask the question when it doesn't seem obvious to me why we've got these Byzantine systems out there, and no one can really give you a straight answer on anything. And I don't mean that as a negative. It's just that it's so diffuse and so many parties are involved, you must at times feel confused yourself. I mean, I can see three different agencies tearing out a culvert and putting a new one in. You know, I'm not, okay, I see the shaking hands. I'm using it as an example, but there's got to be a lot of overlap going on here. I just can't believe there isn't.
Doctor, I think I can explain it. It's the same reason we have a dentistry board, an optometry board, and you can go right on down to the psychiatric board. They're all doctors. They're all people involved in this stuff, but they all have their turf.
And we've tried to bring a few of them together.
We actually had this conversation this morning in the same hearing room in General Government Ways and Means Sub regarding the Board of Accountancy and the Board of Tax Preparers. And there actually was a study done last interim to look at combining the two in leaving their unique functions still functioning, but basically the back office things. And that's a very small... that's probably low-hanging fruit, to look at seriously combining two or three agencies together who do the same function to some extent with different goals and different unique goals is a massive undertaking. And it has been talked about it before, and we talked about it just recently, and I think
it's a worthwhile discussion.
It's worthwhile probably having that discussion. Paul, why don't you make a note of that maybe we... before we get into phase two, we can take some time and have that discussion in this committee.
It might be something, Mr. Chair, that would be looked at in the interim when you have more time. You'd be careful about it, not rush into making any rash decisions that would hurt a program. But at least have put some thought to it.
Yes.
We had some discussion last session. Hearing, I believe, was Representative Jensen's committee about taking parts of OWEB apart and putting it in water resources and this and that. And one of the things, the reason I didn't go along with it, I was in opposition with a lot of my close colleagues, was at the time I felt that the Oregon plan, one of the things the feds were looking at is, were we maintaining a grassroots support within the watershed councils and oversaw by one agency that was coordinating all these 90-some people, 90-some watersheds down there. And I thought that probably that would show a backing away from Oregon's commitment to maintaining that grassroots support. At the time when we get to delisting, we've got the habitat issues addressed more. And like you say, in the interim, take a look if it would fit. But that's why I wasn't in favor at that time. So I thought it would send the wrong signal.
Good point. That's the kind of points that have to be discussed and fleshed out, and doing it during session is impossible to do.
Yeah.
It has to be thoughtful, careful, prudent discussion.
Well, we could probably approach the subject and discuss it, maybe even with some of the various agency personnel in the room, and have just have a realistic maybe appraisal of what would be the dynamics in play? What are the things, the mechanics of doing something like that?
Or is it even worthwhile?
It may not be Senator Shields.
I just wanted to play with Representative Krieger's phonology for a moment and address, you know, for 30 years I was a Methodist minister, so they called me Reverend Doctor because I had a doctorate. So I would say Senator Dr. Bates.
Yes,
this phonology that Krieger, Representative Krieger, used is a very good one, in the sense that he said it's the same reason we have a, you know, a board of optometry and a board of dentistry and a board of podiatry and so on. And when you get right down to it, I don't want a podiatrist doing surgery on my eyes. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes it isn't obvious that some silos really do need to exist. Not always, but sometimes, because of unique work that they do, and part of that unique work does have to do with exactly what Representative Krieger was talking about. Having worked with, in my district, there's three different watershed councils, and their voluntarism and everything else kind of, I think, depends on a really good relationship with OWEB and the grant system that they've learned to navigate. Thank you.
Interesting thought. Representative Shoffler gets a good point.
Speaking of phone calls, don't get any dentists in my district.
We're going to talk about fluoride and water here, are we?
Yeah. Let's not go down that road. Okay, all right.
Sorry, Mr. Going down the drain.
Sorry, Mr. Sure.
Fluoride on
station.
Does fluoride leach? No. All right, let's please continue. We've got an hour left, and we want to get through the rest of the agency's presentation and talk about your priorities list and 10% cuts list.
Chair Krupp, absolutely, and I think we can move through this fairly quickly. If I might just add one comment to your discussion, not necessarily on the point of consolidating natural resources agencies, but perhaps more in response to Senator Bates' valid concerns about the cross-fertilization of some of these performance measures. And there may be some ways we'd be happy to work with the committee to refine those or make any changes that would be needed. One thought that we've had is that certainly on those performance measures that we have that we think are they're valid for OWEB certainly, but they are also kind of Oregon plan performance measures. To the extent that our partner agencies are pointed in the same direction would certainly be helpful for us. But also there may be some measures out there that could be more targeted towards measuring OWEB's performance. For example, one performance measure that would be I think meaningful for the investments that we make is for us to be monitoring the effectiveness of those projects on the ground. And that's one thing that we'll be talking with you more as we get into more of the details of our budget. It's very important for us to be able to measure that and report on that so that our board knows what kind of bang for the buck we're getting in terms of the investments we're making on specific types of projects. So I just wanted to offer that up.
It's a relevant point, and it's the type of thing when you're trying to measure the effectiveness of grants that you give that improve stream quality. That gets back to this overlapping monitoring issue, because ODF&W is going to want to know what the results of that is, because they're looking at the same issues for fish health and so forth. And DEQ is going to want to know for TMDL, water temperature issues for them. And all of this is so intertwined that it is difficult to say, much as the point I made to Representative Shoffler earlier when it comes to, you know, delisting, where are we on that scale? Well, there are so many agencies that have a piece in monitoring that it is difficult to find a piece of monitoring data that is specifically attributable to what you've done. This is not easy to do, and I'm not sure it'd be any easier even if you had them all combined for that matter.
There might not be, and Mr. Chair, you're right. And if you want to look at the worst case, I'll show you DHS. Okay, we're not picking on you here. Okay, don't take it that way.
All right, fair enough. Let's move on. Thank you.
Well, performance measures 10 and 11, I think we've covered. These are both deal with the Federal Endangered Species Act and the State Endangered Species Act, and the same issues come to bear. Performance Measure 12 is a placeholder, Department of Administrative Services customer service performance measure. We're waiting to hear from DAS on that one. Just two other brief points, and we'll close on this chapter of our presentation. We also are responsible for performance measures with respect to the use of federal funds under the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund. There are measures, the federal government also is interested in accountability for the use of their dollars, and we're in the process of working with NOAA Fisheries and others in developing draft performance measures, or there are draft measures now that we expect will be finalized by this summer. So OWEB will be responsible for accounting for those as well, we'll certainly share information on those with the committee as it becomes available. And secondly, as I mentioned at the outset, there were additional information items requested about OWEB's program. They are contained in Section 3.5. I don't know if the Chair Krieger, if you want us to go through those or whether you want us to move into our the next chapter.
Maybe we've got to get through what we need to get through today, and if we have time, we might come back and glance at it if people have some questions specifically.
Very good. Well, with that, we do move into our final chapter here, and this is the 10% reduction option that was requested of this agency and all agencies through the Legislative Fiscal Office.
We got a reference page in our book here. So
this will be chapter 4, tab 4.
Okay.
In your materials.
There we are. Okay.
And hopefully the numbers in the document you have will be the same as the numbers in our slide here in our PowerPoint presentation. I'm confident they will be. We were looking at in doing our analysis, the way we are looking at this table is that the going from top to bottom, the top are the cuts that we would recommend making first. The ones at the bottom are the ones that we would make last. This is not the full list. I just want you to know that there are two slides on this. And Chair Krieger, would you like me to just walk through these?
Yeah, just go through real quick as you can there.
The Restoration Project Grant Program, these are the capital funds that we have in the governor's recommended budget. And this is roughly a 10% cut from those funds, which are roughly $34 million. Certainly not an area that we like to pull funds from, but I guess one point I'd like to make at the outset before I get too full into the weeds. Our total cuts, I think, are around $6.2 million under this exercise. And to give you some context of what that means for us is that our agency operations budget is a little over $4 million. So we really needed to look at all our different sources of revenue in making these cuts because we could easily take our whole operations out.
These are 66 funds?
These are Measure 66 funds for capital purposes that would be available for on-the-ground projects otherwise. We also, in the next item there, is effectiveness monitoring position. This is an option package that we're in the governor's recommended budget. This gets at the point we were discussing earlier in having someone in our agency focusing full-time on looking at and measuring and assuring that projects that are funded by the board are effective. The next piece is the non-capital grants. I may need some help on this one. I'm trying to remember what we were taking a look at here.
Are these
payments to other agencies?
Out of federal funds?
Okay. Yeah. These are payments to other agencies out of both federal funds, is the $1.5 million, and operating funds. And I can't remember if this was a direct 10%. This was a 10% off of that item.
And then we're cutting federal funds here. Does that reflect us removing some matching funds somewhere else? Or?
No.
So we're just saying to the federal government, we don't want this money. Is that what we're saying?
Well, we're doing the same thing we did on the other budgets. We got federal funds, other funds.
I understand.
They're not general fund, general fund funds.
Right.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in this particular case, I think what would happen was this is money they passed through to other agencies for Oregon plan type activities. Mm-hmm. So I presume that the money would just stay with OWEB and be used for grants or something like that. The match that the state uses for the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery money is Measure 66, so there's no chance of that going away, at least until another 10 years or so.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, also to add on that point, one thing to bear in mind with the funds that go through the OWEB budget is they are dedicated for specific purposes, and there's less flexibility in terms of their use. Obviously, the Measure 66 funds have those dedicated constitutional purposes. The federal funds also have very specific purposes for their use. Moving along on this list, the next item, it would be to eliminate another option package position. This is a public information outreach position. One of the charges for OWEB is, in its broad watershed health and watershed enhancement objectives, is education and outreach. The agency has not had a position focusing specifically on those areas for some time now. The next item would be, another option package, which would reduce two limited durations to halftime. These, I think, are in our fiscal section. Fiscal and grant management. Thank you. The next item is the independent multidisciplinary science team, IMST, reduction. I think it was mentioned earlier, there is an option package related to, in the governor's recommended budget, related to the IMST. I believe the total for that package is roughly $500,000. The idea behind that option package was to return the IMST to its its staffing levels from a couple of biennia ago. Under this scenario, this $356,000 cut would place the IMST, at its levels under this current biennium for operation levels.
How many people are on that IMST team, and what is the salary they receive for serving?
Mr. Chair, there are seven members of the IMST team. The only ones who receive salary are the private consultants who charge for their time, allotted for the efforts that they make in helping with the IMST. Any state or federal employees do not receive compensation for their work.
Do you have any figures on
For the record, Ken Beerley, Deputy Director. The funding that goes to Oregon State University for the IMST helps to offset professor salaries for the professors from Oregon State University who are on the IMST, and it also pays for graduate students who act as staff for the IMSTs. So the increase in any level of funding for IMST typically goes to an additional graduate student or two to help them out in their efforts. There's a fixed amount to cover the salaries for the Oregon State University professors.
It goes to the college, and then they get reimbursed?
Correct. There's an interagency... Chair Krieger, there is an interagency agreement between the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board and Oregon State University, and they bill us on a reimbursement basis for those costs.
Thank you, Ken. Moving along the list here, the Lower Columbia River Estuary Partnership, who you heard from Deb Marriott yesterday, the proposed 10% cut is a straight 10% cut out of the $300,000. Roughly $300,000 that is budgeted in the governor's recommended budget. The next item, it would be to reduce the production funds available for our biennial report This is a report that that not only reports on OWEB investments throughout the state, but also reports on the Oregon plan more broadly. The next item would reduce Oregon plan outreach funds by $34,000. And then at the bottom of the page, we have a desk that we use at ODFW offices in Corvallis, and this would eliminate that desk for the biennium. Similarly,
Tommy, is there not a person that sits behind that desk? Does the desk to talk to people by itself? I didn't notice any FTE on that.
Mr. Chair, there are no FTE to that.
Really?
That's right.
All right, you got to explain this to me then, because this is a novel approach to efficiency in government. I need to know how we do this, because we replicate this in a lot of places.
I'll give you the desk for $8,000.
Mr. Chair, we, as you know, we work very closely with ODFW on a number of issues, and we have a number of staff who live in Corvallis. And we benefit from having a workstation there, essentially. Those staff that are there, they're actually housed in our Salem office, but we do have an extra desk there. Similarly, on this next page, in Portland, we have a similar situation where we basically rent space from another agency to have a desk. It helps in terms of staff that we have that have a lot of work in Portland. In both of these, we would eliminate those desks.
Okay, fair enough. Now, I see eliminating your deputy director position is an option. I'm looking at your deputy director, and I'm thinking to myself, how would you operate? I mean, you don't have that many FTE anyway.
Mr. Chair, I think that would be a serious blow to the agency to lose that position, and we don't offer that up lightly, nor do we offer up the half position of the science and policy advisor. These are critical functions for the agency. We felt, however, though, that in making this, that we could have just taken $6 million out of our capital grant funds, but we wanted to use the program prioritizations that we've developed. With the deputy director position, the thinking behind that is that if we're a small agency, and that kind of mid-level management position isn't necessarily something that is an obvious need for an agency. However, I think that's more in that's not the reality of this position. This position covers a lot of ground. It has a significant role in helping shepherd our monitoring section and a lot of our intergovernmental work. So we certainly don't offer up either of those positions lightly, and certainly we'll strive hard to convince the committee and others that they should stay in our budget.
Well, fortunately for you is that this is largely an academic exercise in reality. So I wouldn't anticipate, since there's no general fund in there, frankly, any movement in this direction. Doesn't mean that we wouldn't continue to advocate for efficiencies within the agency, but I would have some serious doubts that we would see that happen. Representative Shoffler.
Thank you. And it's directly related to that. How much staff time did you spend on this? And I appreciate your efforts, by the way, because I know you're charged to do this. And then can you just briefly explain the carry forward and how you – is that money that you just have still to pay for grants, or is that efficiencies, all the above, layoffs, attrition, quit? Can you explain that to me, too? First of all, how much time did you – how many hours did you all spend on this exercise?
Lots.
Mr. Chair,
the soon to be eliminated deputy director will answer that position.
If I may, for the record, Ken Beerley, deputy director, I and Chair Krupp, Representative Schaffer, I'd like to speak a little bit here and interrupt Tom, because Tom took an incredible amount of effort. He was in the office till midnight on a Saturday night working on this. And he probably wouldn't tell you those hours, but I think what's important here is that this is important information. The agency took it seriously. We had at least three senior staff or more working a couple of weekends to pull this information together. And it couldn't happen without our budget and our program people. But Tom used it as an opportunity to become intimately familiar with the agency. He represents us extremely well. And for somebody that's been on a job for less than a month or shortly over a month, he's really knocking the socks off of us. And that's, his efforts have been what's made this clear and understandable.
Ken, how long have you been with the agency now?
Since the earth cooled.
When it was G-Web?
I came to become program manager of the Governor's Watershed Enhancement Board in 1996.
Right, thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I
please
might
continue.
If I might just add, now I'm feeling very guilty about having the deputy director position on our cut list here. but also, Representative Schaffler, I wasn't sure if you were asking specifically about the 10% reduction list or about our whole budget piece together. I don't want if you were talking about what time it took for us to pull together our 10% reduction list, I want to assure you that I wasn't staying up till midnight and that we weren't working through the weekends just on that piece. This was the whole budget document. I think we can get through this very quickly at this point. Just wanted to point out to you the other items here. We talked about the two positions. These are our real positions within our agency. But right above that, we have items of lottery funds for $15,000 to cut in some of our professional services funds, and then reducing our employee training agency-wide by half to by $10,000. $10,000. So a total of 4.5 FTE would be included in this list. Of that, live bodies would be 1.5 FTE.
Just for the conclusion of this exercise and the semantics of it all, if you did take those cuts or cuts of a similar nature that produced that lesser amount of expenditure, you would still have that amount of money sitting there for you to spend or carry over, would you not?
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. Could you please repeat that?
Well, you're going to get the same amount of money coming into you whether we give you expenditure limitation or not, correct? Okay, so if you take these cuts, you got $4.2 million or more than that. You got all this money just sitting there. You're not going to expend it. It's just going to sit there. And so how does that fulfill the mandates of Measure 66? I guess is a question I would pose as a commentary to the members of the committee, and I think we probably all recognize that. So, any further comments to the committee?
Mr. Chair, if I might,
yes.
I didn't respond to the carry-forward question that Representative Schaffler had. And asking what are the sources of those? What are those funds?
Yeah, I mean, why do you have that much money left over to carry forward?
Carry forward are funds from multiple sources. They're already committed by decisions of the board to ongoing grants. And sometimes those grants take years to implement.
Okay, thank you.
They could be on Johnson Creek.
I hope they are.
With that, Mr. Chair, I think we're at the end of our formal presentation. We'd be happy to respond to any questions from the committee.
Members, questions? Paul, would you need to cover any ground additionally that you can think of at this time?
Mr. Chair, I would point out that there is, behind tab 3, there is some additional information that the Joint Legislative Audit Committee felt, while it didn't quite rise to the level of a performance measure, the agency should report on, and I would just remind the members that those four items are there, starting with titled Additional Requested Information About Awards Program.
Very good. Okay, I see that.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I'd like just to add also, there is more information about the IMST in tab 8 and the Lower Columbia River Estuary Partnership in tab 9. give you more background on those entities.
Since that question has been asked, Mr. Chair.
Yes, please.
Can you talk to us just a little bit about what the, I'm a kind of a newbie here, what does the Lower Columbia River Estuary Program do? What? Seriously. Why are you laughing?
Because I had the same question yesterday. I have to go through the discussion. I'm not going to embarrass this woman. But you had some very good questions as far as I'm concerned.
Mr. Chair.
You did or didn't ask the question.
I didn't ask the question.
He wanted to.
It's just strange to me. I'm thinking, like, what the heck does this people do?
That's a fair question, and we've certainly got time to address it.
Chair Krupp, Senator Shields, I'll do my best. I've been on the board of this partnership for a few years, so if I can't answer this, I'm in trouble. The Lower Columbia River Estuary Partnership is part of what is known as the National...
Why is it called a program here and a partnership there?
It should be called partnership. The program was the former name, Chair Senator Shields, and we just made an error there. The group is now formally called the partnership. It originally was called a program. It is one of a number of estuary entities nationwide that are funded in part through the National Estuary Program. And the Lower Columbia River, there are two in Oregon. There's a Tillamook Estuary Partnership as well as the Lower Columbia River Estuary Partnership. And their mission, essentially, is to educate and put into place conservation actions to make a healthy estuary. And in the case of the Lower Columbia River Estuary, they cover a lot of area. It's all the way, starting from the mouth of the Columbia River all the way up into the Portland metropolitan area. So it's a big chunk of real estate. And the partnership itself has representatives from both governor's offices in the state of Washington and the state of Oregon. It has OEB is represented, and as well as state natural resource agencies from the state of Washington. It has local communities, local government, conservation interests, business interests, a really wide array of folks sitting at the table, and their goals are to help the public understand the values of the estuary in the Lower Columbia River, and to put into place actions to help restore the estuary. And they work in concert with federal and state and local partners to move forward on those objectives.
Yes, Representative Krieger.
Weren't they active in the dredge spoils issue at the mouth of the river?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, not directly, no. There certainly a number of the folks, members of that group, had direct roles in the permitting of the channel deepening project, but the estuary partnership did not have a direct role at all.
Chair,
Senator Bates.
We'll go back to Senator Shields' question. It was exactly the same as mine. I wasn't going to put the question out publicly. I still don't understand what they do. I understand the educational part. That was pretty straightforward, students and programs and stuff. But the amount of money being invested, have they purchased land? Have they improved habitat along the river? I know they've got a paddle pathway thing, but that's not what we're talking about here. Has water quality improved as a result of the estuary through marshland or wetlands?
Valuable question.
Chair Krupp,
what are their accomplishments?
Yeah, what have they accomplished for the amount of money we've spent?
Chair Krupp, Senator Bates, I can give you as much information as I have. I regret that Deb Marriott's not here to respond to those questions, because she can give you a lot better detail than I can. I do know that there is an action plan that the Lower Columbia River Estuary Partnership has developed to restore as much as 11,000 acres of wetland habitat, key wetland habitat. And they are in the process of funding and implementing, in combination with finding the resources and finding the manpower to implement projects throughout the estuary on both sides of the river. I can't tell you, sitting here today, at what point they are in achieving those goals, but they do have a strategic management plan that focuses specifically on the ground actions, and that is a key function for that group.
Yes, Senator.
I'm pulling from memory, but I and I'm not sure how good my memory is, but I think Senator Dukes, am I not right, Tom, that Senator Dukes knew an awful lot about this estuary partnership?
I would have thought she would have.
Senator Dukes?
Yeah, Chair, Senator Shields, I'm certain that she would, given that she lives on the estuary.
If we have to, we can get her to give us a detailed answer.
They may be doing a great job, Mr. Chair. I just don't know.
Chair, Senator Bates, if I may, just point you to the tab 9, where there is a I'm going to have to look at this myself to make sure I'm giving you the right page. On the
9.0.1
talks about the purpose of the estuary program in more detail than I could provide you just sitting here today, but also it talks about different functions. For example, on the second page, there's a monitoring and evaluation function, and then bulleted below that is activities to date, which would give you the more depth, in-depth status report. There's also an education piece that I spoke to, and a report on activities to date that they've done, and then habitat restoration on page 3 of this section that lists their broad goals and activities to date. I think this will give you much more detail and probably much more accurate information than I could right at this moment.
Even on the first page, it talks about increasing habitat functions, 16,000 acres of restored and protected land, 3,000 acres of tidal wetland. Right?
That's correct.
This is helpful stuff.
Well, I tell you, after having read this just momentarily and marked some things up, one of the goals is long-term monitoring to evaluate river conditions. And then it says here under monitoring and evaluation that this plan builds on existing efforts. And it says that goes on to say that they're doing this in under activities, there are 3 ambient monitoring sites in cooperation with DEQ. So the question is, are we overlapping? And if this organization doesn't exist, what happens? Do the feds come in and take over, or do they not care? What changes in the ecosystem if they don't? I mean, if you're looking at working with 11 to 20,000 children and over 200 teachers annually, that's great, but how does that help the ecosystem?
Chair Krupp, I'm not sure that I can answer fully some of the questions that you have. I do think that I can say, based on my experience in working with the partnership, that they strive to leverage existing activities and not be duplicative in terms of their actions. So they're very sensitive to that. And I do think that in my experience in working on issues in the Lower Columbia River, both with the partnership and also within the governor's office in leading the state review of the channel improvement project, there is a big need to have coordination of the different jurisdictions that have a role in the Lower Columbia River estuary area, and the partnership serves as an important forum in making sure that you have the federal agencies, NOAA Fisheries, the Corps of Engineers, the 2 states, and local partners at the table talking with each other and planning and putting into action measures that benefit the estuary. So from that perspective, I think they play a very important coordination function. They also play an important function in terms of bringing additional dollars to the area to fit the purposes of the partnership. In the year 2000, there were, through the Water Resources Development Act, $20 million appropriated federally for purposes of watershed and estuary improvement that was to be split between the Tillamook and the Lower Columbia estuaries. I don't know if those dollars would have happened without the National Estuary Partnership and the 2 established partnerships in Oregon.
It was $20 million in 2003 between the two?
It was authorized but not appropriated, and the appropriations have occurred incrementally over time.
So the figures that are reflected in here in the narrative, it says they received $1.7 million from the BPA to implement water quality monitoring and those types of things. Those are all...
Mr. Chair, that's a separate...
That's a separate appropriation, yes, from the $20 million that was appropriate. Well, was approved but not appropriated in reality.
Authorized, yes.
Authorized but not appropriated. Members, additional questions? Is there some skepticism here amongst the panel members? I detect some of that, perhaps.
This is new information we're learning. It's a good thing.
It's a good thing to learn, Senator. Yeah. Absolutely.
I still have some concerns, but that's okay. I think your question was right on the nose. And
well,
I'll review the information.
Yeah.
The operative words would be will and would, okay, and not have. Okay, so I'll look the information over some more.
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if I can be of any help, I'd be happy to be a liaison with both the partnership and IMST. If you have information needs, don't hesitate to give me a call, and I'll pass that along.
Very good. And Representative Shuffler. Well,
considering there's so much money being thrown around by other entities, is there any way we can start a Johnson Creek estuary program?
Talk to your
sounds like Fort Jamaica.
Oh, this is the federal government. Sorry.
Okay, if there's nothing further, thank you very much. Appreciate your presentation and that of your staff and the audience. And we are concluded. We are adjourned.